How many were there? I mean, I know there were you lot.
Yes.
But were there any others?
Oh, yes. We went back and we then mixed in with all the other people. And they were of a vast number of nationalities. There was French, there was Dutch, Belgium, there was the odd Pole. And generally there was a sample from most Europeans. All a mixture of languages. But we managed to sort of communicate with each other. And
they were all evaders?
Some of them were just getting out of their own country. Yes, I suppose you could say they were all evaders of some sort. Or escapers, whatever, whichever. We were outnumbered as British or UK personnel. As opposed to the other people that were staying there. And of course we brought a Russian in with us, so that added to it. There was a fairly calm sort of atmosphere there, and in the evening we all sort of got round a table and we sort of played a universal form of poker. I don't think so much money exchanged hands. We hadn't really got anything much, but it was it was a social get-together until one day then, which was only a couple of 3 days at most, I suppose, we were told that we were moving on that evening. And just the British people and Canadian and the Russian were given papers. We had to fill in, of course, home information for the air attaché in the initial circumstances. And I was given some papers in the name of somebody, Captain Randall. I thought, well, I suppose he went out under some other name. And I just wrote down on his papers any address I could think of. It didn't really matter. I subsequently came to the conclusion many years later that he wasn't a Captain Randall. He was a sergeant, Flight Sergeant Randall, who was a captain of a crew which had been shot down previously. And a considerable friend of mine now, Bob Frost, he had stayed with the family in Paris in the same flat as I had done only a matter of about 3 weeks earlier. So it was most likely it was Bill Randall who was his skipper. And we were taken out to a restaurant. And I'm not sure who took us, whether it was the air attaché or whether it was one of his staff. Anyhow, we went to it and we had to a decent restaurant, had a meal, and then deposited at the mainline station where a compartment was reserved for us. And we got aboard.
Now, was there still this question of being threatened by arrest, or?
I don't know. I don't think so. We got papers which were would have satisfied the authorities if they had been concerned about us. I think the main problem area was up near the border, and for some considerable number of miles inland. We didn't really consider there was any problem about being accosted by police or the Guardia or anything. We had seen a number of police on the road journey down through Bilbao and down through Spain out on the roads, but nobody had stopped the embassy car.
So what about the train journey? What was
it was an ordinary night journey in the train going south. When it was light, the train stopped here and there at the odd station, and there were traders, so you put it outside trying to sell you water or food or fruit or sort of travel goods and things like that. But there was nothing much we wanted. We'd been supplied with some water and some wine, and we waited without buying anything. Not that we got much money to do so. We eventually came down to the south of Spain, La Linea, I think it's called, and we got out, And there was a mini coach waiting for us. We were directed to get into it by the person who received us. I've got no idea of who or what he looked like or whether he was in uniform or not. I think he was in civvies. He must have been, because we were in Spain still. We went through the Spanish authorities and
no problems?
No, there was no problem at all. The bus had picked us up at the station, of course, and we went through to the border. And we then went across the stretch of land which joins Gibraltar to south of Spain, and we went through another lot of authorities on the British side and straight into really what was the airfield. It seemed to occupy the whole of the width of that stretch of land. We had to go through customs and what have you, and they wanted to just turn us out our pockets, show what we got. Not that we've got much. I had 300 French francs still, and they said, "No, you can't bring those in." So they took them, and
you've got a certificate here.
I've got a certificate, a receipt for them, and I thought, "Oh, I'd love that for a lot." Anyhow, you're back in the service again, and we were still in civilian clothes, of course.
Now you got back on the 28th of. Of
26th, I think.
26th of October.
26th of October, yes.
Yes, the telegram's the 28th, that's right.
Yeah.
So it's a whole thing, it takes less than a month, you know.
Oh, yes.
20 odd days, three weeks.
Yes. Yes, it did indeed.
How did you feel when you got into Gibraltar?
We were quite delighted about it, but I think the most telling moment had been when we got up from the river across the road and up the hill to the site where we had the brandy. Both Mike and I sort of turned and looked towards the French side, because we see the other side of the valley in the moonlight, and we both made a rude gesture in that direction. But that was the telling moment, really. What else was to come? We thought, right, well, it's not going to be can't be any worse. So,
so what happened?
Then we went into the main camp, made ourselves known again, and we were accepted into the Air Force as part of it. As I say, we're still in civilian clothes, and we stayed there two or three nights. During the day, we were re-kitted out with RAF uniform, but that was not on the first day, it was the second or third day, and we got a certain element of other kit just to take us over for the time being. Whilst we were there, we walked around what there was of Gibraltar, which was available. Most of it seemed to be shut off. We went down onto the waterfront, and there was a Catalina pulled up onto the slip, and we thought, well, we can just go and have a little look at that. Nobody challenged this, there's hardly anybody in view, and the chap got out of it, and I looked at him and he looked at me. I said, "Hello, what are you doing here?" And he said more or less the same to me, and it was Dickie Fairley, who had been with us in Aberystwyth on the boat to Canada and through the courses there. And I'd lost sight of him on the way back at Halifax. So although he'd been very ill on the ship going over to Canada, he had been posted eventually into Coastal Command of all places. And so I said, "Is this your place?" He said, "Oh yes." He said, "We've been up on the Russian convoys for some time. We've now been posted down here." He said, "What are you doing in civvy clothes?" I said, "Oh, well, we're just passing through. We're on the way back to the UK." And he didn't say, "Where have you been?" But the implication was there. But we didn't tell him we'd come in from Spain. We sort of just let it dry. So I said, "Do you think we can have a look round?" He said, "Oh, yes, in you go." He said, "I got to go up to the control tower there, and yeah, it's okay, it's open. So we went in and had a look around the Catalina, and the navigator's table and position was large compared with what we had in the bombers, both the Wellington and in the Halifax as well. They were quite small compared with his chart tables, and his, they got two big blisters on the side. So he had a magnificent view around. So I felt quite envious. But there we are, that, we were just having a good look, and that was it. So we went into, Mike and I stayed together. Oh, I hadn't said, when we were at the control coming into Gibraltar itself, Alexis was separated from us, and that's the last we saw him. We didn't even say goodbye or anything like that. They just sort of said, come this way. And he went, and I understand he was taken up to see the governor. But whether this was a yarn or not, I don't know. But in subsequent years, very recently, I found out that he was sent out of Gibraltar back through to the UK a couple of days before we were. So they certainly shifted him pretty quick. Mike and I, we went into the occasional cafe. We had the beer was more expensive than a glass of sherry. So we went in, spent an hour watching the flamenco dancers and the entertainment, and then returned back to the base. I'd sent off a telegram to my mother to say that I was safe and well, and I rather gather she got a telegram telling her that I'd arrived in Gibraltar. And so she knew things were okay. One evening, I think it is what, 30 days in October? Yes.
I think so.
Yes. That day we were warned that we'd be going back to the UK. So we packed our stuff up, and eventually we were picked up, taken down to the airfield. During that day, I'd also gone back to the custom or control, whatever it was, in Gibraltar there, and got my 300 francs back. I thought I wasn't going to leave those behind. So we were ready to go. There had been a crash on takeoff, I think, only a couple of days earlier. Polish General Sikorsky, was it? Was killed in the accident. But we then got aboard a Dakota with the American Air Force. And it was dead uncomfortable. It really was. It was meant to fly in parachute troops, I think, because the seats were metal and there was nothing else to sit on but the metal. And it was a sort of bucket seat. So I imagine they had a parachute type which sort of filled that bucket and then sat on top of the parachute, which was probably more comfortable than we were. But, so we took off, and we couldn't see anything out. All the windows were papered over, and it was just a question of sitting there on the number of hours that we were flying. We went out round Spain, up the west coast of Portugal, out to sea, of course, and across the Bay of Biscay. And I couldn't say what height we got to, but it was jolly cold. I know that. We'd only just got our ordinary uniforms on, and there appeared to be no form of heating either. And eventually
and this
got light.
First of November, according to you.
Yes, that's right. That was the first of November. We came down at Portreath in Cornwall in daylight, so we spent the whole night travelling, and there we had to go through customs and immigration reception and what have you again. I didn't declare anything as far as the money or anything like that was concerned. I just kept stum, and we then got back on the plane with the same American crew, and they flew us up to Aldermaston, which was an American base, where we unloaded, and there were other people travelling in the plane. It wasn't just Mike Joyce, Crop, and myself, but it was a regular run, I rather anticipated. We went into Aldermaston and taken into one of the, I think, NCO's mess and for some food, which we had, and we were then taken to the RTO in Reading Station by Jeep, by the Americans. I think they probably had done this before. We weren't the first to come through by a long chalk. So we probably followed a routine there.